You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, May 27th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Canadian libertarian columnist from the Toronto Sun, Anthony Fury, will be here, I guess, to debate us about libertarianism. We got another email. We figured, why not go ahead? Also, the story of this horrible, horrible mass killings in Santa Barbara County over the weekend. Seven dead, seven injured. One of those dead includes the shooter and killer. Just a more reminder of the need for some type of sensible policy to restrict gun purchases in this country. Meanwhile, in Europe, the right wing on the march. Fascism in many respects across European elections. It's sort of a blowback from austerity. Also, the Republicans in the House have a message to the Pentagon. There are some security threats we don't want to hear about, particularly if they involve cottage industries and science. And Glenn Greenwald announces what the latest release will be from the documents leaked by the NSA leaker Edward Snowden. The names of those in the United States targeted by the NSA. Not sure when that release is coming, but it's imminent, folks. Let me say two things. One, we got an email from Anthony Fury, who I'm not familiar with. He's a columnist in Canada who wanted to debate libertarianism. And we had such fun with the professor from Loyola Business School, Walter Block. We figured, why not give it a try again? We shall see. I'm not terribly familiar with the man's work. I don't know, but we will endeavor to enjoy ourselves and see how it goes. Also, at the end of today's program on the free show, I will have an important announcement regarding, it's actually not technically regarding the future of this show, because the future of this show is set in stone, ladies and gentlemen.
For now.
It's set in stone, but it's a malleable stone. But I do have an important announcement that I think will interest all of you, which I will offer at the end of today's program, the end of the freebie half. And I just want to remind you, this show is completely 99.9% funded by members' subscriptions. So if you can become a member, please, by all means, do so today at majority.fm. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will be talking to Anthony Fury.
You're a state aware of the world at ease. It's a valid force.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program a nationally syndicated columnist from Canada, Anthony Fury. And Anthony, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Sam. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
Anthony, what's what is your website? I just want to plug that as well.
Yeah, thanks. It's furyonpolitics.com, Fury spelled F-U-R-E-Y, and you can tweet at me at Anthony Fury.
Okay, so Anthony Fury, furyonpolitics.com, that's with an E in between the R and the Y. So, Anthony, you sent a couple of stories that you wanted to touch on, but I imagine they make for a larger point. You cited Halifax considering changing or banning doorknobs on new homes, ostensibly, I guess, to provide more access for handicapped. An animal board, took some animals away from a woman. And another story about Ontario moving ahead with calorie counts on restaurant menus. What's the... What is it that you're trying to what is the point of highlighting those stories?
Thanks. These are all stories happening in Canada right now. I think there's some similarities to a couple of them in the United States. You know, at the end of the day, and I want to begin by saying, when I first became politically conscious, Sam, I was a pretty left-leaning guy. I wanted good things for people. You know, you hear about the poverty statistics and many other sort of negative, sad indicators happening in people's lives, and you go, that's not good at all. So you become a fan of certain calls for government intervention that you hear about. But then I started to realize, well, some people's idea of good things is going to differ a little bit from my idea of good things. And then I realized, well, hang on a second. Sometimes if these people get into power, I mean, they're going to use their power to enforce good things upon me and upon others, even if we don't really agree on what's good about those things. And then I realized, gee, you know, I don't think my conception of liberty is not that the majority or a certain person gets the power and then enforces good things upon people. My conception of government is that you want to maximize liberties. And when I look at these three stories, Sam, these are examples of people's pliability for big government gone totally off the rails, a hyper-regulation of our lives that is even turning previous left-wing people centrist. I say the biggest thing that moves people towards the liberty movement is being screwed over by big government in a way they never thought imaginable, and that turns them on a dime sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, I agree with you. I don't. You know, for instance, I have a problem with wars and with a lot of government policies. I don't know if I have a problem with these specifically. I haven't looked into them, but I will stipulate that maybe maybe they're not good policies. But what is the alternative? Well, let's just start with something that you said. What does that mean? Maximize liberty. What do you define as liberty?
Well, generally, I define a society in which you're not regulating much because you believe more in the ability of both voluntary association and for people to work it out by themselves. Generally, the things that we want to criminalize or make illegal are things that violate people's liberty, violate people's consent. But I think more and more now we're drifting towards wanting to legislate optimal living, optimal standards of care. So one of the stories I pointed out is that humane societies for animals in Canada have delegated policing authority, even though they don't have the same oversight as police. And I'm very wary of, you know, policing. I'm wary of some war conflicts, as you mentioned you are. But at the end of the day, these organizations are able to essentially enforce optimal standards of care on pet owners. People are being charged, low-income people who don't pay for dental care themselves in Canada, are being charged for not treating their dogs for gingivitis. I mean, it's absolute madness.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, look, I will stipulate, without even knowing the details of it, I mean, if it helps the context of our argument, I will stipulate that there are bad laws there are bad regulations. But the real question is, I mean, I think everyone is aware of that. But the point is that when you say something like we want less government, I mean, do you really, I mean, what does that mean? You're saying that in the context of a vacuum. Let me use an example from the United States, for instance.
Sure.
The Obama administration has proposed putting ratings on colleges and universities in this country, based on an equation that would basically measure how much money you put in and how much money you get out. Now, I happen to think this is and ostensibly, I guess it's so that it will crack down on some not very reputable for-profit institutions.
Sounds like a terrible idea.
But I think it's a terrible idea. However, it's not because I have a problem with big government. I would like a government actually to spend more money to ensure that there are multiple options for low-cost or no-cost universities in this country. So now, by your standards, they're both problematic, regardless of what the outcomes are, right? Are they both problematic simply because it's more government in your mind, or what?
Well, for starters, I think the first example is definitely problematic because it's more big government. Because the examples I give, I mean, I understand you don't know the details of them, so you're acknowledging maybe they're bad laws. But I think people will give the government the benefit of the doubt in many of these instances because people have been seduced by the government for many decades of politicians selling the idea that they should be doing more and more, they should be involved in more and more industries and sectors and parts of your life that they weren't involved in the 1980s, the 1960s, the 1920s, whatever you want to name it, it keeps going. So that people are just so amenable to the idea, well, why wouldn't the government actually go out there and tell you what universities are better, more bang for your buck, or whatever matrix they want to use? Meanwhile, we all know, Sam, that in the private sector, we have a magazine in Canada, and we have a think tank, several, I think, that provide ratings on various high schools, universities, colleges.
No, I agree with all that.
So done. But I think people are increasingly amenable to the idea that, well, why isn't the government doing this?
Well, no. Wait a second. That's not what I'm talking about. Again, it's not a question of specific policies because I certainly disagree with specific policies the government follows.
No, but
what
I'm
is
saying
your
that
perspective
the way the philosophy
on
is going
funding,
now.
What is your perspective on funding and making low cost education available for people? Is that problematic as well, or is that one that you do like?
Well, I think it's definitely something that the government didn't do at a certain time period, when whatever jurisdiction we're talking about in Canada,
well,
or
in the
America,
United States,
public
for
education.
Instance, for the United States, for instance, 30 years ago in this country, you could, in fact, get a virtually free, high quality higher education. But because of cutbacks, we don't have that anymore. So the historical analogy, that part of it breaks down. So let's just address it on its merits. Do you think this is a good idea? If not, why?
Well, if we're talking about colleges and universities, I think the more government has been involved in funding them and regulating and providing for them, and in Canada, universities are very government-funded, I think it's very much a bad thing for a number of reasons. Government is notoriously slow to respond to the realities of the situation and the economy, the free market demands, so they keep funneling money towards careers and professions that don't provide a bang for your buck. So it's half funded by the taxpayer, and it's half funded by these poor kids who leave school with, on average, $30,000 of debt. And our schools are way cheaper here than yours, so I know your debt levels are way higher. Folks get out there, they can't buy a house.
Well, but my point is, if it's a free school, they're not going to leave with debt.
Yeah, so go. Well, there are free schools right now, Sam, but people actually, there's anarchist universities that you can go to in the park. Andrew Carnegie started the library system because he wanted free education for regular folks in America. I'm completely in support of all of that stuff. The challenge with the whole government system is we're going to say it's free, but of course the bureaucracy is going to grow, the regulatory regime is going to grow, and it'll never end up being completely free because you're going to have to you're going to have to continually back funnel all this growth that we have because there's no owner looking after a government education system.
Anthony, in this country, now I understand you're from Canada, you don't know the history of this country, and I don't know the history of Canadian higher education. But I am telling you, I have reams of data which show that states are cutting back on their funding of these state university programs. They are not getting the money from the federal government to make up the difference. There was at this time in this country a very good system of state universities that were at virtually no cost, very low cost. So the issue of debt was not an issue. That's why we have such explosive debt in this country for student loans that we've never had in the past. So is it a good or bad idea, according to you, to address this? I mean, you say they're slow, so they're not providing money into the universities that are going to provide a good return on investment, and so it's creating debt. But I'm talking about universities that do not add debt, significant debt, to their graduates. So is that a good idea?
I'm telling you that already exists. I'm telling you there are so many ways you can go out and educate yourself in society without having this government regime and bureaucracy in the way. I mean, the challenge right now is
how would one do that
in
the United States?
If we make any bachelor's degree completely free right now, and we have this problem in Canada, people are indulging in degrees that really are completely disconnected from what the economy needs, what's going to provide them with a job. And look, I completely support that. I have tons of friends who went to theater school, film school. If that's your passion, if that's what you want to do, go ahead. But why, Sam, do you think that there are people out there who are working, scraping by to get ends meet, and they are being taxed so they can underwrite people's self-indulgence in something that when they graduate does not actually benefit the economy? And if we force people to be more answerable to free market pressures, they will in fact go out.
Well, Anthony, there's a story in the New York Times today that basically says you're wrong, that the fact of the matter is a college education increases your chancing making more money and finding a job. That's just the reality. That's what the data says. So, I mean, you could talk about all your friends who are doing
zero education and art is not going to get you into an insurance company compared to someone who has a university degree. I mean, that much is a fact, that it's generally considered good.
So what's the alternative that you're talking about? Libraries?
The alternative I'm talking about, we know that 50 years ago, people used to be able to go and work at an insurance company or what have you at the age of 19. They put on a suit, they go to work, they do fine. They didn't have the debt because they didn't go to the degree. Because I think we lie to, I mean, I have a liberal arts education and it benefits what I do in a 9-to-5 position. But I think it's a complete joke that we have a society where we're telling, where our leaders are saying, we must have free education, presenting the idea you're not a real adult if you haven't gone and gotten a history degree. I think people benefit from reading history, whether it's in university or on the side, but why should we be taxing people to create a system where we're teaching liberal arts? Why should people be going into debt for it when at the end of the day they're going to go work at an insurance company where 50 years ago the insurance companies didn't want anything except a high school diploma?
That's right.
The insurance companies actually did a lot better back in the day.
Yes, 50 years ago we didn't have women in the workforce in this country to the numbers we do today. 50 years ago, a whole subset of Americans were not allowed to enter the
job force.
You're
suggesting women have destroyed the economy?
I'm sorry?
You're suggesting that women's introduction to the workforce has made it harder for average people to go out there, and that's why they need a diploma? I think if we had more, we have women in the workforce, so we're growing the economy, and we had less people having to purloin their checks over to create the education state.
All right.
I think we'd be doing a lot
better. I'm trying
to
get into something substantive here. So you're saying that there should be no government support for higher education, period?
No, I'm not really saying that at all.
Okay. I'm unclear on what you're saying.
I'm trying to rebut the claims that you're making about education here.
Okay, so what role should government have in education?
What role should government have in education? I think at the end of the day, government had very little role in education, and I think it did pretty well, and I think voluntary associations made it go. You're asking me, you know, Plato and Aristotle couldn't answer the problem of the heap. Are 7 rocks a heap? No, obviously. Are 42 rocks a heap? Yes. Which one in the middle is the problem of the heap? Which one makes a heap? I can't tell you the exact perfect sliver of the right size of the Department of Education. But what I can tell you is when departments of education hit such a large rate that the ratio of administrators is doubling, this is a stat in Canada, doubling in ratio to the amount of people attending, when people are, you know, our birth rates are declining because people are crippled with debt, they're not entering the workforce later, they're marrying later, we have a situation on our hands, and this is a situation brought about by infantilizing young people and prolonging their adolescence. The education system and the idea that you need 19 degrees and 7 internships before you can go out and hit the workforce is essentially telling our young people we don't believe in them. And that's why we don't need as large of an education system right now.
Okay, so your suggestion is that that government support of education is infantilizing young people, and the reason why they're not entering the workforce is not because we have we're in the wake of a financial crisis, and we have extended unemployment and wide unemployment. It is simply because they're opting not to go into the workforce because they've been so coddled in this sort of infantilizing world of education. Do I have that right?
Bingo. Yeah, I think you've got that completely right. And I think it goes into the much broader narrative, Sam, that this is not, Sam, this is not at all about what's happening right now with the recession. This is a broader picture that over 100 years, people's idea of what the state should be doing has vastly increased, and they are so much more pliant to when a politician wants to bribe them with their own money into thinking that politician should create a broader regulatory regime, more public servants, more debt rolls. That is the issue right now. That's the issue.
You know, there's another word
It's that it's harmful
Anthony,
to all of us.
There's actually a word for what you're talking about. It's called democracy. If people are looking to the government to provide more of their services. Hold on for a second. If people are looking to a government to provide more services, whether it's Social Security or Medicare, which has been rolled in over the past 100 years, whether it is free education, or whether it's the imposition of a minimum wage, or whether it's regulations on making sure that we have clean air and clean water and safe food,
People will vote for these things.
Pardon?
People will vote for these things.
Yes.
And then people will go about and create them. I'm not denying that. I'm not suggesting that this is criminal or wrong. I'm suggesting that the way this narrative is being sold is completely wrong, and it's harming us right now. It's harming human liberty. It's harming human freedom. You don't think it's bizarre that we're facing staggering debt amounts, that we're hyper-regulated as a society right now, and somehow we're supposed to keep going, that there are progressives out there who say, no, 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 we're not there yet. One more thing. One more department needs to be created. One more level of regulation. I mean, Sam, people have been seduced by big government into thinking they need more big government. We are eroding our self-reliance. The fact that you guys spend something like interest charges for
Anthony,
your
hold
debt,
on for one second.
It seems so like damaging to your society.
You have a real problem with I guess what's apparently going on in Canada where. You folks
no,
are
Western
so
society, actually.
I'm sorry?
This is a problem in all Western governments.
All Western
any
society.
Data, whether I'm reading data from the UK, from Greece, from America, I see this massive scheme in which people are shifting resources from one person to the other with the promise that this is going to make all of our lives better. Thankfully, you know, technology has improved our lives a great deal.
Are you familiar with the Social Security program in this country?
Yeah, somewhat, not a lot. But,
okay,
yeah.
Well, let me just give you a nutshell. What it does is it forcibly takes taxes from your payroll taxes.
Yeah.
And it puts them into the Social Security system. If there are, and it pays out money to you at your retirement age. 65 is the full retirement right now. It's going to go up to 67. You can opt for smaller payments if you start if you take retirement at 62. It also
is going up by a couple of years too soon.
Right. It provides for orphans. It provides for disability. And if there's more money being taken in than is being paid out, it goes into essentially a small investment fund,
sure,
which buys U.S. Treasuries. Now, this was imposed on the United States, or you could look at it that way, or you could say the people demanded it. And so do you think that this is problematic?
And it's interesting you say the people demanded it. Do you think that when there's an election and you've got Mitt Romney saying one thing and Barack Obama saying the other thing, you know, do you think that there's third or fourth or fifth or sixth options out there, but people aren't being given a referendum on those options? So right,
well,
now
I can tell you what the polling says,
there,
and I can tell you that
the polling on those two issues. You know, we present only a certain number of issues, and
well, I'm just trying to have a conversation with you about.
I know, and I'm explaining to you my answer. Because the political class has a particular state and broadening its role in our lives, of course they are only going to present options that are in the polls and that are on the ballot box, which serve their interests. Very few people run in office saying, you know what, America, I believe in you, that you can do it on your own, and that, you know, I don't really need to force you into a situation where you're a ward of the state. We're going to work on moving back towards strength. No politician, Sam, is going to do that. No bureaucrat.
Well, I mean, in 1936, when the Social Security program was introduced, we had the system you were talking about. And two-thirds of our elderly lived in poverty. So, I mean, you need to start talking a little bit more concretely here. What is problematic with our Social Security system? That it has lulled us into a situation where our liberty is now taken because we are guaranteed a minimum floor of a retirement?
It's the totality of the programs.
What's that?
The whole reason that I began with presenting this doorknob ban, the weird menu laws in Ontario, the animal stuff that we haven't talked about, is I'm saying all those things pave the path to where we are right now. And when we talk about education, the question isn't, because I'm not proposing really rolling back any component of the Canadian or American. Well, there's some specifics, but we won't go into that. More the question is to flip to the progressives. How much more, Sam, do you think the education system needs to grow? How much more do you think that entitlement programs need to grow? I'll say, I don't want to take anything back, Sam. All I want is to stop the growth that outpaces all other indicators.
So what we
that
have
is sending
now
us down the path to Greece. I just want to save entitlement programs right now so people can use them.
All right. We'll get to Greece in a second. But so what you're saying,
I want America
is
to be Detroit.
No, okay. What you're saying is that or Detroit. What you're saying is that this is not about the stuff that exists. What we have now, short of the doorknobs and the pet stuff and the calorie counting, is okay. But going forward, what would I want? Well, I would like a healthcare system more akin to yours, where we would have more coverage and it would be less onerous, that like you have in Canada, frankly. In terms of entitlement
programs, I don't think the
numbers
show your healthcare system's going to be less onerous.
I'm sorry?
I don't think the numbers show that your healthcare system's going to be less onerous. It's going to be less onerous for some people and more onerous for other people. That's what happens in redistributionist policies.
Well, that's right. It's going to be more onerous for people who can afford it and less onerous for people who can't afford it.
Yeah, and people who can afford to have more taken away from them therefore should. Is that the idea?
Yeah.
That you're presenting?
Yes.
So we should just kind of, you know, take from people and give to other people.
That's what taxation is all about, redistribution.
Yeah.
There's no taxation system in the world that doesn't redistribute.
Hopefully most taxation systems will not be actually about redistributing from one person and giving to
they
another.
They all
but
are.
To create some sort. No, taxation programs that create poor fundamentals, and government used to do primary things, like it created the roads, it created infrastructure. I think it should be creating more public transit. We sort of have a problem there. Now it's gone to creating more tertiary things. We've gone from shared things to public good and common good items that taxation paid for to now going off to spend to other people's niche interests, whether it's the crazy earmark system that you have in U.S. Congress. Thankfully, our pork barrel scheme isn't as bad here, or whether it's other people's entitlement systems. Because the
Wait, who are the other people's entitlement systems? I mean, be more clear. I mean, what are the niche things that we're funding in this country? I mean, like I said,
picking winners and losers in business, giving out random grants to
sports sectors, listen,
to arts companies.
Anthony, there's no government in the world that does not pick winners and losers. I mean, you just said they should be building highways. Well, doesn't that pick a winner of the car over the train?
I also said in the immediate following sentence that one should be creating public transit infrastructure.
Well, doesn't picking public transport pick the train over the car?
Not if you've decided it's a public good. You know what I'm talking about with the crony capitalism here. You say you got five energy companies.
I'm not against.
We this guy more.
I'm all
We're going to give this guy $500 million.
Well, look.
If you decide I'm building a streetcar and you put out a bid and three companies bid and then the best deal for taxpayers is this company, that's not crony capitalism. That's just hiring a guy for public tender that the government should have. I'm just saying the government should have as minimal public tenders as possible.
Yes, I think there should be less government corruption, and I think bad regulations should not be passed. But, I mean, what are we doing? We're just arguing about which, you want more public transport?
Which are bad,
I do too.
What are corrupt?
What's that?
Yeah, I'm arguing that we should have core government fund expenditures, but we should not go out and have these tertiary issues.
Now, who gets to decide what are core government expenditures?
Ah, and there we go. Who gets to decide? The fundamental argument I began with, good things, who gets to decide them? That's why we should have as few decisions of these as possible, Sam, so that, you know, if you get into office,
to decide which
you're
decisions
not making decisions
are made.
I disagree with, so that I get into office, I don't get to violate Sam Sater's morals and political philosophy by getting into office. If you leave it all up to us to do on our own as much as possible, and if you approach it from that philosophy, and to go back to the whole reason I'm here and that I'm starting with, if we further the philosophy that human beings can do it on their own, that we're industrious, brilliant folk who working together in communities and voluntary associations can solve so many problems out there, we don't need this massive, slow, hurtling regulatory regime full of corruption
well, you keep
that
saying
nobody
regulatory,
understands.
Okay. All right, so yeah, well, elections sort of decide those things, no?
Well, yes and no. You really think, you know, Barack Obama said, I had no idea what was going on at the IRS, so clearly we didn't revamp all of government just by bringing Barack Obama into office. Clearly one guy doesn't really have a clue what's going on there. The head of the IRS says he doesn't even know.
Well, yes, no, I will concede that in a country of 300 million people, when you are managing the apparatus that's to provide services for them, whether they're core or tertiary or whatever, however you want to label them, then it's a big ship. And, there's at the margins as to, like, you know, what how they're going through applications for tax-free status in an office in Cincinnati. I would concede that President Obama probably is not terribly involved in that. But
you brought up a great point. Actually, why do we have so many groups that can even have tax-free status in our countries? Why do we have to pay all these people to administer whether there's tax-free status? Beyond a certain point, complexity is fraud. If you have a thing government's doing that it doesn't even really need to do, you're taking money from other people, not just the rich, but low-income people. You're taking money from them to pay for these people to decide whether or not someone gets tax-free status.
So is your argument that
we
shouldn't have tax-free status for, let's say...
just lower the general income tax rates and get rid of all tax-free status.
Tax-free... For groups that are doing, like, feeding the poor.
Yeah, get rid of tax-free status.
All right. Well, I mean, that's an interesting thing.
I mean, if are they a corporation? Are they not-for-profit? I don't know. We can talk about having different classifications. But you need to simplify your Income Tax Act.
Well, wait a second. This is not about income tax. This is not about – this is about not-for-profit corporations. That's what a 501(c) status is all about. All right, let's move on. I'm trying to sort of get a hold on what you're saying here because
– lower the taxes.
Do you have a problem with – you don't have a problem with regulations when it comes to like clean air or clean water or food safety? I'm just trying
food
to get a
safety.
Sense of
you
where you're coming
like
from.
You can't say that this is just a salad but there's actually rat poison in it and they haven't said it there.
That's right. You need regulations that say what can be, what level of, mercury can be present or lead can be present in children's candy.
Sure. I mean, at the end of the day, And we're talking about where we go from a sensible level of government to a ridiculous broad level of government. Sure, I don't think that's a battle. Ideally, one the public would be able to decide for themselves, but most of us don't carry mercury detectors in our pocket.
That's right.
So I'm really not concerned about that fact. No.
So,
are we probably?
So you're really just upset about those three stories you sent me, is what it sounds like.
I'm really just upset. Those do upset me quite a lot, Sam. You are right about that. But no, I'm pretty much upset about
give me something concrete, like a big policy. Yes, that in Halifax, I don't know whether or not it makes sense for the Halifax buildings to be more accessible to people with handicaps. I don't know.
Okay,
all right? But I'm going to stipulate that this.
I'm
those
giving
three
you concrete policies. I'm giving you broad philosophical ways to approach policy out there, in which we see that countries out there that have tried.
Now I think what you're doing is actually doing a bank shot on the problem with a BA, maybe. Because you're taking a broad philosophical approach to what we should do about specific policies. So your
I spoke about the specific policies. You said, "Oh no, you got to go bigger than that. Those are too specific." And then I go bigger, and you go, "No, you're not."
Well, no, I'm just trying to get it straight. I'm just trying to understand
what you
said.
What you want is me to find the exact thing that you want me to talk about. And I did that with the education, because I didn't come here to talk about the education, Sam. I came here with a full dossier of things I wanted to talk about, and we didn't talk about them. That's okay, because I want to, I want to further the small government value, so I'll go in any direction you want me to go. But then you say, where do you want to go? And I go where I want to go, and you say, no.
I'm perfectly willing to entertain the notion that you have a broad philosophy that
I'm
we can apply.
I'm making a cultural argument here, and you're telling me that no, we're not making cultural arguments. Like, okay, sorry, I didn't know that was offhand. I didn't
so
know that
you
was
want
out of hand.
More
I'm
of a,
sorry.
You're making a cultural argument that people should look to the government less to solve their problems. And,
yes, and
okay.
I think when you look
I think,
at the overriding
listen, I think it's wonderful
you can,
if people
you cannot,
don't look
you cannot to, deny, Sam, that there's regulation grown in so many sectors, whether it's food safety or things where it doesn't need to exist, that debt and deficit and size of government has grown disproportional to the size and population increase, whether you're talking 50 years ago or 100 years ago. I believe that that sucks out the independence and the belief in the individual to accomplish their goals on their own. That is a bad thing.
So wait,
we
let
need
me get
an
this
attitudinal shift in Western government
let,
so that
let
people
me see
aren't
if I
rioting in the streets just because you've taken away their little niche tax credit or because you've taken away their pork barrel funding, which is what people do today because they're so entitled in the belief that they are allowed other people's money.
Okay, so the debt and deficit in this country has created a sense of people feeling like they can't rely on themselves. All right, broadly speaking, I'm just
exactly.
Okay.
So your debt ceiling conversation that you guys had last year was all about how evil the Republicans are because maybe they're going to let a little default or just because they're pushing the conversation. Whereas the real conversation was how did it even get to this point to begin with? But
well, we know how it got to that point.
You guys were even having that conversation.
We know how it got
to
that point.
It was so irresponsible.
No, we know how it got to that point. We had a financial crisis. There was trillions of
enabled by big government.
No.
Yes.
No. It was
yes.
because of deregulation.
Because George Bush and Bill Clinton wanted people to have free homes or homes that they could afford through the National Housing Program, where they actually couldn't afford that.
I don't know what National Housing Program you're talking
way
about. You got to be more specific.
Market.
Listen, if you want to get into policy with
less
me,
crony
let's talk
in
about
American society. You would not
let's,
have had that.
Let's talk about. You want to get into policy, we can have a policy conversation here. I was trying, you say you want to talk culture, but if you want to talk about what led up to the financial crisis, I'm happy to walk through that with you. I don't know what the national housing policy you're talking about is. If you're talking about the Community Reinvestment Act, we know that the vast majority of these defaults did not come from any banks that were under the auspices of the Community Reinvestment Act. We know that it was deregulation in the financial markets that severed the ties between these loans that were being made and the securitization of these loans.
Did you call for an end to the bailouts? Honest question. I just don't know.
For the banks?
Yeah.
Did I call for an end to the bailouts? I called
Did you oppose
for
them when
I
they're happening.
I
Because if called because the cases, for, when it was deregulation that did it, let them deal with it. Let them die. I don't care.
No, I wanted actually the relief to go directly to the homeowners. I mean, I think initially those bailouts for the banks, I think there's an argument as to whether they were necessary, and we saw the implications of what happened in the financial markets in terms of jobs. But ultimately, I would have liked to seen a lot more of that money reoriented directly to the homeowners to do a cram down on their principal. So, I mean, in some sense, yes, I guess I called for an end to the bailouts, but I called them to be redirected.
We're heading further and further towards, when I talk about the regulatory regime, I appreciate the chuckle. Heading further and further to centrally planned societies where, you know, I talked about we don't need history degrees underwritten, even though I have a history degree. I do want people to know their history more because the direction we are heading, Sam, tells us time and time again, there are pretty recent past examples that show that if you try and deal with, you know, food, and you brought up food security issues earlier, if you try and deal with food security issues in a government way, as opposed to a free market way, you actually make the problem worse. We have not come to a head yet.
Okay, well, so what is the free market solution? In this country, we have literally, I think it's something like 43 million people, I think, on food stamps. What is the free market solution to providing those people with food security?
It's a very good question because we've created a system that has gotten them, you know, really entrenched in that, and that's the problem.
Well, actually, they're not entrenched in it. People dip in and out of it, but go ahead. So tell us, what is the free market solution to that?
Some percentages do, some percentages don't. In Canada, I think it's 80% of people who use the homeless shelters do dip in and out, and then 20% are in the perpetual situation.
Okay, so answer the question for me. What is the free market solution to that?
I agree with what you're saying. A free market solution to a food shortage program is to create...
Not shortage. There's plenty of food. It's some people can't afford food. So what is the free market solution there?
Well, it's funny that you talk about the food regulation. And you say to me, am I happy with the idea that there, you know, you can't say there's not rat poison in it when there is. You also get to other systems where there's so many other processes where there's such a great amount of regulation on the food supply chain, whether it's through the transportation system or through, you know, the different rules or the different corporate tax rates in different jurisdictions, and then they're jumping from one state to the other, or they're going down to Mexico to process their food. You get to a point where you're disincentivizing these people from creating, food services out there that would be at a better cost for people. I mean, we have, you know, right now there is food available in America and Canada very cheaply from places like Walmart and so forth, but people say, I'm not sure if I really like the quality of that food there. But that's the only
people
stuff
can't
that
afford the food
right
even at Walmart. That's why if they could, they would not be eligible for food stamps.
Sam, how is this possible? And you know, and I'm glad you bring this up. How is it possible that your government is spending $250 billion a year on interest charges on the debt, and there are people who can't afford basic food, and yet there are thousands of programs at the local, state, and federal level to end poverty, and yet people are hungry right now? How is that possible? I think that the government programs are the one that's failing. If you're wasting hundreds of billions of dollars...
Well, now, explain to me,
program,
wait a second. I'll address what you just said, but I want to hear what the free market solution to getting those people food is. You're basically saying strip away the regulation in the shipping, strip away the regulation in the food safety, and the food will be cheap enough for them to eat it? Is that what you're saying?
The free market solution is a slow, you can't, you know, if you want me to say abolish the program, the problem is we have a
I don't want you to say anything
society.
Except for answer the question. You said free market.
I am answering
the
question right now, and I'm explaining to you, sure, if we just suddenly abolish the program, the problem is we have a huge vacuum there because people have been used to having the program, and we've created a society that works around that program existing. But these programs are really not doing much to assist people. I mean, they help them get by, but they're not getting out of their poverty situation and being great net contributors to society. The reason I bring up that $250 billion, this jaw-dropping amount that you guys spend on interest on your debt, is if we rolled back all the things that existed that fueled that disgusting waste of money and human resources that's going into paying that, do you think you could not share the wealth a little bit more if the wealth wasn't so sent into the regulatory and bureaucracy regime? That's why we need to roll back. And that's why I'm telling you.
How would we share that wealth?
No. Let me finish.
How would we share that wealth?
Because there'd be less taken away from folks.
And so wait, so people would just give it to the poor people, you're saying? If they didn't have
Yes.
Oh,
because public transit would be cheaper for them, because taxis would be cheaper, food would be cheaper if there wasn't onerous regulations on the companies. Wait, everything would be
public
cheaper.
Public transport would be cheaper if taxes were less? I don't understand what you're saying. So you're saying that if we didn't tax people,
I'm saying get rid of the state as much as possible, so you're not frittering billions of dollars.
Well, then why was
that,
why,
that money
why,
stays in companies' hands?
Why was
they're
there
providing more jobs for
why
people?
Why was
Those
there
people
so
are
much
feeling
suffering
empowered. They're not becoming
before
wars
these
the
programs?
State. We all win. We all win that way.
Wait a second.
I find it funny that you guys who like progress out there have been progressive for decades and have only created a system where it seems like people are getting worse and we have to take more and more money for people to just enable this bad behavior. It's perverse.
Okay, so you're saying that if we have less taxes, which provide for these hamster wheels that run in the government that don't do anything, they just spend money on nothing. If we have less taxes, then people have more money, and they'll give this money willingly to people who can't afford to eat, and those people will have the money to eat. Is that what you're suggesting?
That could be one thing that could happen. What also could happen is that these folks who have more of the money would have more money to go out there and buy the services that the poor person is providing out there. You've got some binary thinking going on, because you're talking about this rich narrative and this poor narrative, and we know that it's actually not that simple, and it's mostly about the gray area out there. And, one of the things that I try and argue the most is that big government disproportionately impacts low-income people the most. So if you got to pay a $25 fee for your car registration, fuel emissions test, which is what we have to do once a year in Ontario, well, you know what, if I got $10 million, I'm not too stressed about that. If I'm barely getting by, that's a major problem, particularly if there's 10, 20, or 30 of those little hoops I got to jump through every year by government. Big government disproportionately harms low-income people.
I see. Okay. And so, all right. So,
it's not a laughing matter. People are going hungry because of the bureaucracy, because they have to pay for the bureaucracy.
And so the answer is to take away their food stamps and wait for rich people to get rich enough to give them food.
The answer would first be to take away the bureaucracy so that there's more money out there, the economy is growing, and then you're slowly rolling people off of food stamps. And then
where is this money going that the government takes?
I don't know where the money is going. People are
but it must go somewhere.
I have no clue where the money is going. None of us know. That's the problem.
It's not literally going into another plane of existence. I mean, it must actually still come back into the economy, right? I mean, the government spends the money somewhere. They don't spend it on Pluto. You may not like the choices in which they're using it, but they go and spend it somewhere. They don't take it out back and burn it.
Sure. Government employees are getting paid, and they're spending their money out in hopefully, local companies and stuff like that. And they're being taxed too.
Right.
Yes. I understand that. But the more of them that exist, the more you have to tax not just the people who don't work there, but the more you have to tax them to redistribute it amongst them, and eventually, you're going to run out of that money.
Why are you going to run out of that money?
So you think you can just sort of cycle? Like, let's say we all work for the government.
Yeah, I think that's an economy, actually.
We can just cycle it all around?
Yeah.
Yeah, you think that, because I find, and we're talking about history, I do a little reading here and there, and I finally tried that in some countries, didn't work out too well, and then
which country?
When they left, what is it? The World Bank tells us that 500 million...
Which countries are you talking about?
500 million, I'm telling you right now, 500 million people have been lifted out of poverty in China because they decided they like the Anthony Fury view of the world more than the Sam Sater view of the world.
I was cited in the World Bank? I'm not sure I follow what you're saying. 500
The United Nations has said that when you have a more capitalist approach to society, this is the United Nations, their World Bank, when you have a more capitalist approach to policy, low-income people get lifted out of poverty.
Okay. The United Nations
when you have a
is not the World Bank. But
society.
Aside from that,
the World Bank is a UN agency.
All right. So you're suggesting that in China, they are more free market than we are in the United States.
They're not more free market, but they've gotten burned bad by going in a direction that they went to very quickly, that we're going towards very slowly, which is almost more dangerous because it's creeping, it's seductive, it's slow. You don't realize. That's why I begin with the whole stories. Fury, who cares that the Ontario government is fining fast food locations $10,000 each time they put their calorie counts on a little pamphlet on the counter, as opposed to up on the overhead lighted example? Who cares about that? And that's why at a certain point we all have to stand up. And it's for me, like I said, being a former left-wing guy, going, yeah, you know, I want good things for people. I agree government has some role.
You mentioned you were a former left-wing guy. When were you a left-wing guy?
I mean, I'm still a left-wing guy in many ways. I'm a cultural, you know, I'm still culturally live my life as a left-wing guy.
When did this turn happen? I'm curious.
Right. A decade ago. I'm not an old guy. I'm 30 years old.
Okay. So I assume you went to college?
I did.
Okay. And so what was it that made you turn? Just looking around and seeing stories like this Halifax story or whatnot?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you know, there's a campaign in Canada. This isn't, you know, I'm just giving you one example. People used to wear buttons that said 1% on it. The basic idea being if we raise the income tax by 1% or raise the consumption tax by 1%, you can put that money into poverty alleviation. And they said pretty much poverty would be ended if you did that. And that was a big campaign. And like, you know, you kind of think, well, yeah, I mean, I'd like poverty to be ended. That would be fantastic. And then they do it and they go, well, you know, actually we've got to do this one more thing. And what happened after they raised those rates? So everybody
was it a consumption tax or an income tax?
It was a consumption tax. I think it was the GST, the government.
Yeah, that's a little more aggressive. An income tax would have been a much better move, in my opinion.
Well, if it was an accelerated tax that hosts the rich, sure.
Well, it's not just about
harming
the
low income people. I think there's a moral reason why people want higher income taxes for the rich. It's not just an economic reason to protect the poor.
Well, I think there's a lot of evidence that inequality is very problematic for an economy. That's one reason. Yes, I think it's also to sort of prevent sort of an aristocracy from developing.
Well, competition does that well. When you look at the list of Canadian billionaires, I can't speak to the American billionaires list, there are people whose families do stay multi-generational, but there's still a turnover rate.
Hmm.
In other words, you know, free market.
Well, in this country, we have the lowest mobility that we've had in ages.
Maybe that's because there's not enough freedom in your country.
It's possible.
Allow a guy to go out and build a better mousetrap, no regulation, nothing. And, you know, we're finding there's a lot of lefties who are going to be like me, dropping off the grid and moving to the liberty movement because we are over-regulating so many new trendy technology things, Sam. Mm. Food trucks, for instance, are very hip now, locavore movement kind of stuff. Local governments are just bending them over backwards and destroying every part of their industry. The taxi...
Wait a sec. Hold on. Michael wants to add it.
Every single day I come in here and argue with Sam about my food truck business, and he personally is holding me back from it. So that's correct.
I mean, I think,
that's just one example.
When I start my food truck, I'm going to evict Sam from his co-op.
Yeah.
I'm going to make so much.
I mean, look,
what are you doing with a libertarian in your office, Sam? What's going on? What's going on here?
You're going to be fired in like six months
once you get more ideas like me.
I have
over
no
here to
problem
Canada. We'll chill.
With,
we'll be sweet.
With specific arguments against specific, small bore policies, I appreciate the fact that you don't want the welfare state, I guess, and things like social insurance to go backwards. I think that's admirable.
I wish nobody was on social insurance because I wish they were doing really well. And I want, an economy
that has as much liberty, freedom, and economic
growth where they don't even need to be.
Listen,
I do think we've encouraged
you
people,
and me
Sam,
both,
who
buddy.
Think
I wish we all
have
wings, so that way we wouldn't even have to deal with traffic. But sadly, human history has shown us that that's never the case. That can't be the case. And social insurance has kept in this country millions upon millions upon millions upon millions of people out of poverty and allowed them some dignity in their old age. And
yet if we default on things in the decades ahead, we're no longer going to be able to...
Well, in this country, we will not default on anything. We have the ability to print our own money.
Pensioners their pension if the money doesn't exist anymore. That's what's going on.
But we have the ability to print our own money. So the money will always exist.
Okay.
So I appreciate the concern, but not so worried about that. And if you really felt strongly about just supporting something like Social Security, we would lift the cap and make that tax actually less regressive in some respects, make it more progressive. And that would involve, you know, higher taxation rates. But, you know, in my estimation of liberty and freedom, part of that has to do with being able to live my life in a way that gives me the most amount of opportunity to do the things I want. And if I am not burdened by a massive health care cost, if I am not burdened by massive student debt, if I am able to spend some time with my family when my kid's born because there's mandated paid leave.
And I'm burdened to pay for all of that for Sam Sater. Oh, man.
Yeah, it would be fantastic.
Your luxury is my burden.
Well, not necessarily. It's also your luxury, too.
Yeah, and then if we have to spread the burden out so much and the burden grows because we teach people to become entitled to more and more entitlements, at the end we're all pretty unburdened. Ouch. And I want to get rid of that unburdenment for everybody. So if we get rid of the entitlement culture, there's less burdens for everyone. So I don't – rich, poor, middle class.
All I'm thinking about is all those unburdened people who were living on the streets in the 20s in New York City because they were completely unburdened by that payroll tax. And they were able to sleep on the outside and see the stars to the extent that they could.
I'm glad you bring that up because the goalposts for poverty have shifted a lot these days.
I know.
You know, real poverty was pretty hardcore back in the day. And these days, you know, people kind of complain and you look in the background and you go, man, that's a nice satellite TV he's got going there.
Yeah, exactly. We've become a nation of wimps. But
we have.
Anthony Fury, nationally syndicated columnist.
Canadian.
Appreciate your time today.
Thanks very much. It was a blast. Take care, Sam.
Bye-bye.
The China thing drives me crazy.
Yeah, China's
it's like, first of all, if you ramp up any type of major economic activity in a massive agrarian society whose economy has been completely decimated for like 100 years, it's going to grow. And number two, China grew so fast because they didn't follow a typical neoliberal strategy. Do you know how much
they
public
command
investment?
And control for everything that they built? They had their cities planned out. They had their
build a fucking airport. I'll say it. I'm sorry. I'll note it in a matter of months, partially because government will literally just invest. I mean, the whole demand side of that success story is inseparable from everything. I'd saying like
all well, I'm saying, Michael, is that from now going forward, we shouldn't do that. I'm talking culturally speaking.
And it's offensive to even compare because it's like, yes, they had forced communes that led to famines. And you're comparing a food stamp program to that? Like, it actually is offensive even on that. Like, if you took it seriously for 1 second, it's like, yes, Deng Xiaoping said, you can farm your own land. You don't have to be in forced collectives anymore and not get enough food. That was, like, the major market breakthrough that this guy's talking about that started this reversal.
That was not as enlightening as I had hoped, but maybe it was in its own way. Folks, I have an announcement. We've gone a little late today, and basically I wanted you who were able to listen to the whole program and be able to deal with that to be the first to hear this announcement. As you know, Ed Schultz last week quit his radio show from 12 to 3, the week before Randy Rhodes quit her 3 to 6 p.m. radio show. It appears that Tom Hartman is moving to 12 to 3 on to the extent that it continues to exist, and there's about 40, 50 affiliates out there on that identify as progressive talk radio, commercial affiliates. Tom Hartman is moving to 12 to 3 p.m., starting on Monday, June 2nd, I will be hosting Ring of Fire on the weekdays from 3 to 6 p.m. It will not in any way inhibit my hosting duties here, although, at least for the time being, you will have MB Squared or Matt and Mike Mondays, whatever you want to call it. Maybe, you know, MB Squared just
to
open up the...
I think we have to come up with an actual real imperator for that day.
Yeah, we'll Matt and Mike Mondays.
No. Maybe something a little better.
Still going to be the Majority Report.
What?
Still going to be the Majority Report. You want to come up with MB Squared or whatnot, but...
Well,
okay, obviously. So there'll be no show on Mondays.
That was like a libertarian non sequitur you did yourself there, buddy.
But, okay, so you're stepping on my announcement. 3 to 6 p.m., not sure of all the affiliates that we're going to be on. I imagine that number will grow. I imagine maybe in time we may have the opportunity to be tape delayed on Sirius XM. I'm not sure. But I'll be here at least 4 days a week on the Majority Report doing exactly what we do now. You know, we've talked in the past about how this medium and this forum is good because it can do a 45-minute interview with, well, some are better than others. But I can do a 35-minute, 45-minute, 30-minute interview uninterrupted. And get into some policy weeds. That's not something you can do on AM talk radio. We will, all the details are being sorted out. As you know, I had planned to go to L.A. this week to host the Young Turks. I'm not going to be doing that because I got to put together this other show. So I will not be here Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Although we have I did a pre-tape interview that is going to play either Wednesday or Thursday on this new biography on the Koch brothers. On Monday of next week, Matt and Mike will be holding down the fort. I will be back live on the Majority Report on Tuesday. I would have missed these 3 days anyways this week because I would have been in the Young Turks. But Matt and Mike will be holding down the fort.
4 days in a row.
Well, actually, for freebies, it's really 3 days in a row.
Yeah, because we have the pre-tape.
That's right. Yes. And then starting next week, I'll be here Tuesday through Friday and doing 5 days a week on terrestrial radio. I will still be doing Ring of Fire weekends. And no, I do not know when I will be seeing my family again. I'm going to have pictures posted on. But, you know, I'm going to give it a try. I'm going to see where it's going. It's, you know, there's still power involved in terrestrial radio, still a way of reaching people who have yet to migrate online or adopt podcast technology or streaming technology or app technology. And so I'm pretty excited about it. If you have any suggestions, send them to us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We're going to take a break, head into the better half of the program. I will tell you that this show will not go anywhere. This show will not go anywhere as long as I'm able to continue to talk. And so we continue to need your support to do this program. Hopefully, by doing terrestrial radio, it will help me have the resources to grow this show in the way that I wanted it to grow over the past couple of years, and your support is still very much needed and appreciated. All right, we're going to take a break, head into the better half, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Get the Majority app at majorityapp.com. I'm going to try and work in some special features on this terrestrial show for members of the Majority Report. Haven't quite figured out what they are yet, but we will see. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. 646-257-3920 is the number. If you want to be part of the program, you can IM. We'll be back in just a moment.
I give her my love. She says no. She says no, 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 'cause you're only a friend to me. saw. If I ask her to walk with me, she shakes her head at me. She's a pretty little doll who said no. Ask her to walk with me. Why can't she ever say says you're only afraid to lose.